We'll hear now the word of God from Isaiah chapter 49 and from the Gospel of John chapter 8. It is too light a thing that you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to bring back the preserved of Israel. I will make you as a light for the nations, that my salvation may reach to the end of the earth. Again, Jesus spoke to them, saying, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. This is the word of the Lord. As I said, we've been going through this series on the I am statements of Jesus in the Gospel of John, and I think there's a lot of interesting things about that, but one of the things that I find particularly valuable in studying these I am statements is that when we take the time to understand them, to slow down and listen to them, I think they help us to kind of abandon our tame and domesticated understanding of who Jesus is. And to be clear, right, I don't think any of us intentionally seek to have a tame and domesticated understanding of Jesus. It just kind of happens. Right? Over time, we become overly familiar with Jesus and his teachings. And we've heard it all before. We've heard these expressions before. We become accustomed to Jesus and his words, and therefore they can even seem mundane and ordinary. Right, as the old proverb goes, familiarity breeds contempt. And while I'm sure there are not many of you in here who would say that you have open contempt for Jesus, maybe our contempt for him is seen by how easy it is to simply be unfazed by his words, even when they are shocking and radical. Case in point, just consider John 8:12. Jesus says, I am the light of the world. And I doubt if that really struck anybody here in a meaningful way. Definitely not a shocking way. I didn't hear any gasps. I didn't hear anybody kind of taking breath. I didn't see any eyes open. You're not shocked by these words, right? Most of us here likely agree with this statement. Most of us here have probably heard this statement multiple times. As I said at the beginning of the service, it's maybe one of the more well-known I am statements. We would affirm it. I mean, it sounds good. It feels vaguely spiritual and right, and so we can easily just kind of let it pass us by without deeply considering what it means. And with that in mind, it is, I think, an interesting opportunity to compare and contrast our reaction to these words of Jesus with the way the first people who heard it reacted. Now, I just read one verse of chapter 8, but if you read the rest of chapter 8, you would find out that the first hearers of this statement, I am the light of the world, well, their response was to immediately start arguing with him. And chapter 8 is actually the tail end of a longer kind of debate and argument with people that Jesus is having because of other shocking things that he has said. In John chapter 6, we already saw one of the I am statements. I am the bread of life. And at the end of that time, Jesus pronounces that, that people need to feed on his flesh and drink of his blood. And that caused some shock. John 6:60 says this, when many of his disciples heard it, they said, this is a hard saying. Who can listen to it? And in verse 66, it says, after this, many of his disciples turned back and no longer walked with him. But even many of his followers are struggling with his words because they're shocking and they're radical. And then from John 6, you go into John 7, and in verse 2 of John 7, we're given a context. We're told that the Feast of Booths was at hand. If you don't know what that was, the Feast of Booths, or it's also called the Feast of Tabernacles, it was celebrated in September, October, and it was called the Feast of Booths or Tabernacles because during this kind of 8-day celebration, people left their homes and they built booths, they built tabernacles or tents, and they lived out in those because that celebration was a time of remembering God's faithfulness to Israel during their wilderness wanderings. And it was also a time of celebrating and giving thanks for the harvest. But what this means in John 7 is that because the Feast of Booths is at hand, there are a ton of people in Jerusalem. A lot of people have come to the temple to worship during this time. Lots of priests, lots of scribes, lots of Pharisees are also in attendance. And Jesus goes to the temple and keeps on teaching and saying more shocking and radical things. And all of the arguments of the religious leaders in John 7, they center on questions about Jesus' identity and his authority. And then that leads us back to chapter 8, where far from letting this statement that I am the light of the world easily pass them by, they have a very strong and immediate reaction. Again, if you keep reading in John 8, you see that in response to his statement that he is the light of the world, the religious leaders immediately tell him he's making false claims about himself. And the rest of that chapter is basically a debate between Jesus and the Jewish religious leaders. And the leaders are basically saying, who do you think you are? How can you say such things? So why? Why do they have such a strong response to this expression? What does it mean that it would garner such a strong response? And in truth, as I say, it is actually a little bit hard to say with absolute certainty exactly what Jesus meant when he said he's the light of the world. And that's because this is a very popular metaphor throughout Scripture. The image of light gets used in a wide variety of ways. I mean, you know from the passages I read at the beginning of the message that I think there's an obvious reference here when he says that he's not just the light, but the light of the world. I think he's clearly connecting this to the promise of the Messiah in the book of Isaiah. In 49:6, it says, it's too light a thing that you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to bring back the preserved of Israel. I will make you a light for the nations of the world, that my salvation may reach to the ends of the earth. So I think there is definitely a messianic claim here that Jesus is making, where he's saying that he is a light that is shining beyond the temple. He is a light that's shining beyond the borders of Israel, that he has come for everyone. But then there, again, are a lot of other ways this metaphor gets used. The biblical usage of this word ranges from references to the glory of God's presence, to light being a symbol of purity. Right? God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. It's a symbol of guidance and protection. When you're in the light, you're in a place of safety versus a place of darkness and danger. Oftentimes, this image and this metaphor of light is just shorthand for salvation. To have light is to have salvation. But as we've seen in some of our readings today, it's also used as a reference to wisdom and the knowledge of God. Right, the light of the knowledge of God's word. Your word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. It's an image of instruction in the truth. And even within John's gospel, light is a popular theme. It shows up at least 16 times, forming the main theme of various chapters of the book of John. And it doesn't even mean the same thing all the time in John. Right, we read in our assurance of grace from John 1, right? In him was life, and the life was the light of men. Maybe spiritual, but probably also physical, because right, this is the one who was in the beginning, by whom all things were made. This light is the life event. It's a source of all spiritual and physical light. It's a light that's giving light to everyone in a general sense. But then, even after our chapter here, in this statement in chapter 8, in chapter 9, Jesus will again say, I'm the light of the world. In verse 5, he says, as long as I'm in the world, I am the light of the world, in chapter 9. But the context there is as he is about to heal a blind man. And so the image of light there is light enabling vision. Light enabling us to see. And the physical healing of blindness is symbolic of the healing of spiritual blindness as he shines the light of truth. But then, it's even more complex. Because I think that it's likely that Jesus is also linking himself to a very particular expression of light in the history of the Jewish people. Remember that when Jesus describes himself as a light, he's not just a light, he's a light to be followed. I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Now remember the context of these chapters. John 7:2, the Feast of Booths is at hand. This whole conversation, this whole debate is happening during or maybe at the very end of the Feast of Tabernacles, the Feast of Booths, when the people remembered and celebrated God's faithfulness to Israel during the wilderness years. The wilderness years in which they followed God, in which he led them from Egypt to the Promised Land. He was present with them, leading them out of slavery and into life. And he led them and he provided for them and he made his presence tangible amongst them in a very particular way. These are the words of Exodus 13:21-22. And the Lord went before them, implying that they followed. The Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them along the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, that they may travel by day and by night. The pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night did not depart from the people. Right? In this time of wilderness wandering, God was present with them as a burning pillar of light, of fire, guiding them to new life. And because of God's presence with them as this pillar of fire, light played a very key role in the celebration and the festivities of the Feast of Booths. Hear one description of this festival. This is a longer quote, but I think it's helpful. It says, a fascinating ceremony associated with the Feast of Tabernacles involved lights. Each afternoon of the 7 days, priests and pilgrims gathered at the court of the women. 4 large oil lamps illuminated the court. It was said that the light from these lamps was so bright that it penetrated every courtyard in Jerusalem. The worshippers used to dance before the oil lamps with burning torches in their hands, singing songs and praises. Meanwhile, countless Levites played on harps, lyres, cymbals, and trumpets, and instruments of music. The light festivities continued all night until dawn. Jesus was at the temple. Perhaps it was during the light celebration or when the lights were extinguished on the 8th day that he said for all to hear, I am the light of the world. So, yeah, lots of options for how to understand the metaphor of light. So which is it? Well, I think it's probably likely that Jesus is implying all of the above. There is a sense in which, because he is the I am, he is the fullness of all things, that I think when he says, I am the light of the world, he's saying that he is light in the fullest sense of all of its meanings. He is the one by whom people receive true physical and spiritual sight. He is the very source of life, both physical and spiritual, of all mankind. He is the light of wisdom that brings knowledge and understanding into spiritual darkness and ignorance. He's the light of truth that chases away error. And because he is all that, he is the light of salvation, bringing people out of the darkness of spiritual death and into the light of life with God. He is the guidance and protection of God. And shockingly, he is the glory of God's presence, like a burning pillar of fire. And now you can see why Jesus' words would have caused some shock, would have caused a strong reaction, because he's not saying, hey, I've got some good spiritual ideas for you. I've got some helpful suggestions to make. I'm here to help get you to God, to help find his salvation. Jesus is turning to the Jewish religious leaders and saying, you know the God that you say you're worshiping? It's me. You know this festival that you just had in which you remembered God's faithful presence among you, his redemption and his guidance and his provision in the wilderness? That was all me. I did that. And now I've come to lead the whole world out of spiritual darkness. This is the chapter in which he'll go on to say, before Abraham was, I am. And just as I am rescued you out of slavery in Egypt, I am here to rescue the world from slavery to sin. I am here to be a light to the nations, to bring every tribe and tongue into my presence and into the light and protection of God. I am here that they may all walk in the light of truth and understanding. I am the light of the world, and whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. And in saying that he is the light of the world, he's saying there is no other. Everything else and everyone else will leave you in darkness. So what should we do with this? What should we do in light of Jesus' words? Well, he tells us, follow the light. Just as Israel followed the pillar, follow the light. Let him lead the way. Let him guide you out of darkness. And this is difficult for us, because if we're honest, Jesus' light doesn't seem so bright. Right? We live in a world, which this didn't exist in biblical times, but we live in a world where light pollution is a thing. Right? In the city, you can't see the stars because there's too much fake light all around you. You can't see the natural light. We live in a world of light pollution, and I think that makes it hard for us sometimes to see the brightness of Jesus, because we have our eyes fixed on other lights. There's a quote in your order of worship from Bible scholar Fred Bruner. He says this, he says, sales of all sorts are pitched every day promising human beings real life. From insurance to clothes to cars, Jesus, in competition with the world's rival lights, promises here to give his followers the special wisdom, the light that they need to live a quality life. But there are all these other lights. He mentions sales pitches, and right, if you think about it, that's what every advertisement is. It's a pitch to here you will find the good life. If you buy this product, if you subscribe to this option, things will go well with you. You'll have what you need. You will be happy and successful and free of burden and anxiety and all these other things. Beyond ads, we have fads. This diet, this workout program, this approach to your budget, these are the ways to freedom. These are the ways to have success, to have influence, to have power. These are all the ways of life. And in our particular moment with our culture so divided and so at war with itself, right, there are all these political lights that are saying, this is the way. No, this is the way. There are people who listen exclusively to the light of CNN and those who listen exclusively to the light of Fox News. All these different lights. Or, you know, the internet sensations, the YouTube gurus who say, here's how you fight the culture war. Here's how you find safety and protection. Here's where you find life. They're all claiming to be lights. They're all claiming to guide us out of the darkness into true understanding. We'll know how things really work. We'll know what's really up. But it's all a cheap fluorescent glow. None of them lead to life. They lead to disappointment and dissatisfaction and more anxiety and more worry, strife, disappointment. And ultimately, they lead to death because none of them can save you. But those aren't even the most dangerous lights. Do you know what I think the most dangerous false light that we have in our culture is? It's you. It's me. That's the biggest lie of our culture. Speak your truth. Find your true self. Express your light. Be your own light. Some of you have seen, I've used this as my cover photo on Facebook, and it's one of my favorites. Maybe now I have to put it back up again, but it's a quote from Oprah Winfrey, one of the guiding lights of our culture, at least maybe a generation ago. And the quote, you know, it sounds great. Follow your passion. It will lead to your purpose. But the picture I have, I really like, because it's like on the sleeve of a coffee cup, and it's slightly edited. There's some words crossed out, and instead it says, follow your passion. It will lead you to ruin if that's all you follow. And that's a message we need to hear. Because, yeah, it's hard to get excited about the light when you live in the midst of a lot of light pollution. Right? We fail to see the stars because of the city lights. But if you get a chance to see the real thing, it's so much better. I had a summer in college when I worked at a camp. I was a camp counselor for the summer. And one of the most amazing experiences to me, I mean, I'm a city kid. I grew up in the city, but I was able to get out a lot. I lived in the desert. I could go out in the desert a lot. But as I worked as a camp counselor, there were so many kids that came to camp who had never been in the wilderness. And it would amaze them. We would always have at least one night a week where we would take them out into the middle of the rec field late at night. And they would be overwhelmed by the amount of light they saw in the night sky. Some of them would get freaked out because it was so overwhelming, the beauty of that light. That's what we need to get back to. Again, we don't appreciate light because we're looking at so many of them. But imagine this. If you want to have a proper understanding of what Jesus is getting at by saying that he is the light of the world and that whoever follows him will not walk in darkness but have the light of life, imagine being lost in the woods. You're lost in the woods and it is a cloudy night, so there are no stars. There is no moon. Your phone is dead. So you have no light. It's pitch black. You cannot see your hand in front of your face. And you're stumbling over roots. You're falling down. You're getting injured. You're lost. And you're hopeless because you have absolutely no clue where you're at. But then imagine seeing a light in the distance. It would immediately reorient you. It would immediately give you a point of direction, a place to go. It would guide you into security, into safety, as long as you corrected course and made your way toward it, as long as you followed the light. And you would have to. It's lost in the woods. Man, life and death depend on it. That's what Jesus means. And for those who are here and maybe aren't sure what to make of Jesus, this is newer to you, I don't have time to point you to all the reasons I think his light is one you should trust. All I can say is this, that that in following his light, I have found life. And I know you think, well, you're the pastor. Of course you're supposed to say that, but I wasn't always a pastor. I wasn't always a Christian. And I can tell you that all the other lights I tried to follow led to darkness. But in Jesus, I have found a joy and a purpose and a meaning and a peace and a contentment that goes beyond anything else I had before. Of course, you got to correct course to find that. You have to follow the light. Life and death depend on it. For those who are Christians, maybe you've grown up in the church, I'd still say the same thing. You need to let him lead. You need to let his light guide, and you need to correct course to follow it. I mean, it's interesting here, right? Following implies continued direction. You don't follow by staying still. You follow by pursuing it. And even the verb here is probably better translated, whoever follows and keeps on following me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. And that's a good reminder because, right, it is possible to start moving towards the light of the world, but then to get distracted by other lights and move back into darkness. We do it all the time. So we have a confession of sin every week. We're just as prone to follow all the light pollution I was talking about earlier as anybody else. Even that false light of self. And if you don't think so, let me just ask you a few questions as we close. I said at the beginning, right? It's easy to become over-familiar with these words of Jesus. It's that over-familiarity that actually causes us to start looking for light elsewhere. When was the last time the words of Jesus shocked you? Shook you? Or maybe this, well, let's get real practical. When was the last time Jesus disagreed with your opinion? Disagreed with your life direction, your life choice? You were speaking of your own truth. When's the last time you, as a Christian, had to correct course because you were following the guidance of his light? If you don't know the answer to the question, is it possible that you've stopped following the light? Is it possible that you've let the light pollution diminish his brightness? If so, correct course. He is the light of the world, and whoever follows him will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. And the good news is that he doesn't stop shining. Darkness has not overcome the light. God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. And if we go into his light, it exposes us. It shows us our folly of leading ourselves to all sorts of other things. But it's not an exposure that pushes us away. To enter the light of Christ, he gives us his light. In Matthew 5, he calls us the light of the world. Because he shines his light in our hearts. He purges the darkness from us through his power and his love, that he might fill us and cause us to reflect his light into the world. May it be so. Let's pray.